This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.
I believed he was going to rape me. I tried to yell for help. When I did, Brett put his hand over my mouth to stop me from yelling.
I categorically and unequivocally deny the allegation against me by Dr. Ford. This whole two-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit.
The stunning U.S. Supreme Court confirmation process shining another spotlight on the country's polarized views. However, not to be outdone, here in Florida, Governor Rick Scott is reasserting his right to appoint three new justices to the state's Supreme Court before he leaves office in January.
You know, when somebody tells you they're going to do something crazy, you should believe them. And so we do believe that he'll do it, even though he's admitted he doesn't have the authority. And the second those nominations are made, if he's in office and he makes an appointment, we have a constitutional crisis.
That's League of Women Voters attorney John Mills, who is here to explain why he thinks Scott is out of line.
This actually was resolved by the Supreme Court many years ago when Governor Bush asked this exact question about when a judge is subject to mandatory retirement and serves out his term. Do you get to make the appointment before there's a vacancy? And the Supreme Court said, no, you make the appointment once there is a vacancy.
And takeaways from a rare moment breaking bread with Florida's Supreme Court justices. Bay News 9's Troy Kinsey was there and wonders if a fourth justice might also retire.
There is life after the Florida Supreme Court. And I took that as an indication that, you know, maybe he's mulling leaving the court at some point in the future. And there's been some discussion about Justice Kennedy potentially being a replacement for Brett Kavanaugh if the Kavanaugh nomination were to fail.
All that and more coming up on episode 155 of The Rotunda. Welcome to the program. It was a couple of intense weeks in Washington. Accusations of sexual misconduct clouded Judge Brett Kavanaugh's Supreme Court confirmation process. Accuser Christine Blasey Ford, a professor of psychology, testified before the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter, the uproarious laughter between the two, and they're having fun at my expense.
You've never forgotten that laughter. You've never forgotten them laughing at you.
I was, you know, underneath one of them while the two laughed. Two friends having a really good time with one another.
Judge Kavanaugh took his turn before the committee, unleashing a fiery and surprisingly partisan testimony.
Fueled with apparent pent-up anger about President Trump and the 2016 election, fear that has been unfairly stoked about my judicial record, revenge on behalf of the Clintons, and millions of dollars in money from outside left-wing opposition groups. The other night, Ashley and my daughter Liza said their prayers, and little Liza, all of 10 years old, said to Ashley, "We should pray for the woman."
So quite an emotional moment on Capitol Hill that will continue this week with an FBI investigation into the allegations of Dr. Ford against Kavanaugh. Here's Republican Senator Jeff Flake.
Making sure that we do due diligence here, and I think it would be proper to delay the floor vote for up to but not more than 1 week in order to let the FBI to do an investigation limited in time and scope to the current allegations that are there.
I caught up with Bay News 9's Troy Kinsey on the fourth floor of Florida's Capitol Rotunda. By the way, he's also the president of Florida's Capitol Press Corps.
What's your take on seeing Kavanaugh's performance before Congress?
I didn't think it was the most polished performance. I thought it was impressive that he was willing to testify.
So since Florida tends to mirror Washington, Governor Rick Scott is reasserting his right to appoint three new justices to the state Supreme Court before he leaves office in January. The League of Women Voters of Florida and Common Cause filed suit asking the Supreme Court to block Scott's action, arguing the new governor who takes office on January 8th should have that appointment power.
I don't think you're going to have an arrangement, if it comes to it, where a governor-elect Gillum will agree to negotiate with Governor Scott. I think a governor-elect Gillum would say, well, listen, the people just elected me. You know, they made their voices heard. I am now their representative. You were elected over 4 years ago. And so I could very easily see a governor-elect Gillum taking Governor Scott to court over this.
So I had the privilege of moderating a panel during the annual Florida Bar Reporters Workshop, a two-day boot camp for reporters to better understand the workings of the state court system. The event included an awards dinner on the 22nd floor of the Capitol, where Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Charles Kennedy spoke about seeing three of his colleagues, Barbara Perriente, R. Fred Lewis, and Peggy Quince, prepare to retire in the coming months. Troy Kinsey served as MC for the ceremony.
Your jokes...
Did I do an okay job?
Your jokes were...
That was a tough crowd, man. I think the jokes were terrific, Tramiel. The issue was the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, half the crowd is lawyers, and then half the crowd are journalists.
Just as Barbara Perriente, she was sitting at my table. I don't know, she squinted a bit at your jokes.
Uh-huh. Well, so the bar opened at about 5 o'clock, and the program began at about 5:30. If I had it my way, we'd open the bar at 5, and the program would begin at 7.
Mm.
You know, the jokes, by virtue of my experience in the press kits, the jokes always get funnier the more drinks people have before the program begins.
But anyway, with all this talk about Supreme Courts on the national level,
yeah,
we have our own drama here in Florida with three retiring justices. What's going on?
Well, they are going to retire because they face a mandatory retirement age, and they're set to leave the very day that Governor Scott leaves office. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with this lawsuit that the League of Women Voters and Common Cause have filed in the wake of Governor Scott's direction to the JNC to begin selecting candidates that he might be able to pick from to make these 11th hour appointments that he wants to make. Which would remake the court in his image. You know, these are three, the retiring justices are three progressive justices on the court's liberal wing. And so Governor Scott conceivably on his final day in office could make these, could replace these jurists with three conservative jurists.
Is it too presumptuous of the governor to think that he should be the one to appoint these as he's leaving?
Of course
office?
He is, but Rick Scott's a politician, man, and he's been presumptuous throughout his entire political career. You know, as a former businessman, I think he's adept at taking risks and seizing opportunities, and this would be the last major opportunity he could seize as governor. Now, this lawsuit was filed a couple of weeks ago. Remember, the court basically declined to hear the first suit that the league filed because they said, well, nothing has happened yet. The governor hasn't actually acted. Well, now he's kind of acted because he's directed the council that nominates various candidates to be selected as jurists to make these selections. So we'll find out in the coming weeks, probably the next couple of weeks, if the court takes the case. If it does, the future of the court, the court's makeup, I think, will come down to how it rules in this case.
So a bold move by Governor Rick Scott. While Scott claims he'll work together with his successor on interviewing nominees, agreement is far from certain if progressive Democrat Andrew Gillum assumes office, or even for Republican Ron DeSantis, who has asserted his right to choose in this Fox News GOP debate.
The next governor, in all likelihood, is going to have three appointments to our state Supreme Court, which is a historically liberal court. They're activists. They legislate from the bench. I can tell you this, I am best positioned to identify those candidates for nomination to the state Supreme Court who are going to apply the law faithfully and will not be judicial activists. If we get it right, we can end judicial activism in Florida for a generation.
It's rare to hear from members of Florida's Supreme Court. It's hard to catch their thoughts and opinions outside of the courtroom, but that opportunity was given to reporters at the Court Reporters Workshop. Again, Troy Kinsey.
The night that we had with these justices, any takeaway from that night, seeing them talk to each other as their swan song, we don't hear from these justices a lot. What did you take away from this dinner?
I think Justice Kennedy gave a pretty memorable speech. He was the keynote speaker, and it was a salute to his three departing colleagues, who, remember, are ideologically polar opposites. I mean, these are three true blue progressive jurists. Every now and then, on cases dealing with industry, for example, one or two of them may side with the conservatives, but for the most part, it's a very polarized court. And he said that he indicated that his fondest memories of these three departing justices really revolve around the spirit and the work ethic of Justice Pariente in particular. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, if you have to do a lot to keep up with her because she gets here before the sun comes up and leaves after it goes down. And he goes, I really appreciate that. You know, our standing on various cases notwithstanding, he said that he appreciated her work ethic. And then he talked generally about how just because he's not one of these retiring justices, he's always thinking ahead to his future because there is life after the Florida Supreme Court. I took that as an indication that, you know, maybe he's mulling leaving the court at some point in the future. And there's been some discussion about Justice Kennedy potentially being a replacement for Brett Kavanaugh if the Kavanaugh nomination were to fail. Remember, he's on President Trump's shortlist of jurists who Trump has said he would call from to make his Supreme Court nominations, that list that came out in 2016. Justice Kennedy is on it. Mm-hmm. And so it wouldn't surprise me if maybe he's undergoing a White House vetting process right now.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Visit rotundapodcast.com to learn more about sponsoring this program. You'll have the ear of Florida's most influential policy and decision makers listening to this program right along with you. Yes, this program is listener supported. Oh, and pardon the mess on rotundapodcast.com this week. We're giving the website a facelift to make it easier for you to keep track of the people and issues shaping Florida politics, and also our sponsors. As always, thanks for your support. Welcome back to the program. As mentioned, Florida is in the midst of its own Supreme Court nomination controversy, as terms of three of the seven justices expire around the same time a new governor will be sworn into office. Governor Rick Scott is claiming his right to find replacements for Justices Barbara Pariente, Fred Lewis, and Peggy Quince. But in a lawsuit, the League of Women Voters and Common Cause argue that this power should fall to the incoming governor. League attorney John Mills joins the program.
Well, first off, Governor Scott says that to the public in press releases, but when he's in court and has to accept what the law is, he concedes that he's not going to make these appointments unless something very unusual happens. Like if one of the justices were to die or to leave office early for some reason, which there's no reason to think would happen, or if the new governor were to forget to take the oath in advance. And that happened back, I think, in the 1950s. A governor didn't take the oath until the inauguration in the afternoon, so the outgoing governor in the morning made some appointments, and they were challenged. And because the new governor hadn't taken the oath yet, the old governor still had the power. They've all figured that out since then, and Governor Scott and Governor Bush and Governor Crist, they all take their oath actually in November or December after the election, so that the moment their term starts at midnight, the morning of the first Tuesday following the first Monday, they're in. Mm-hmm. They, you know, their term springs into action and they're in, so that the outgoing governor can't kind of steal that appointment power.
So where are we now? What's going on?
Well, we when he first announced this last year, you know, we filed a lawsuit, a petition for writ of quo warranto directly in the Supreme Court of Florida, which we felt was the proper way to challenge an assertion of authority by a government official. We briefed that, and, you know, I think one of the main reasons for filing it was just to find out why he thinks that he could make the appointment, mm-hmm. because this actually was resolved by the Supreme Court many years ago when Governor Bush asked this exact question about when a judge is subject to mandatory retirement and serves out his term. Do you get to make the appointment before there's a vacancy? And the Supreme Court said, no, you make the appointment once there is a vacancy. We wanted to find out why he thought that he could make the appointment.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of jurisdictional objections and everything, and he never did provide any authority for why he would make the appointments. And actually, at oral argument, when he was his lawyer was questioned by the Supreme Court, he conceded that he can't make those appointments as long as the new governor takes the oath on time and the justices don't leave early.
So if he conceded, and why are we here?
Good question. Good question. He continues to assert to the public that which he admits he cannot do to the Supreme Court. And so we became extremely concerned when he convened the Judicial Nominating Commission and ordered them to make their nominations by November 10th. How they can make nominations to him when he can't make the appointment doesn't make any sense, just as a matter of common sense, I think. And so, you know, we looked at the Constitution, and in fact, the Constitution quite clearly provides that you don't make the nominations in this circumstance until there's a vacancy. Mm-hmm. You don't make it ever until there's a vacancy. And when you have a mandatory retirement, the court's already said the vacancy is when the term expires.
Have we been in this position before? Hasn't there been precedents giving the governor right to do what he's asserting?
So in the past, and both the governor and the commission say, we'll look at how all the justices have been appointed before, and it should be the same. And there's two mistakes that they're making when they say that. Well, three mistakes. The first is you don't change the meaning of the Constitution just because people have not been following it. So to the extent that these past examples are examples where the Constitution was not followed, that doesn't change the meaning of the Constitution. It just means there were irregularities. It's, of course, too late to do anything about those. That what it's done is done. But the other two reasons, first off, most of the examples they cite involve justices who resigned. Maybe they had mandatory retirement coming up, but they resigned early. And the law is clear that that's different. The idea that the vacancy happens when the terms expire is only when you have expiring terms. When you have somebody resigning, there's a different constitutional provision about that. And if they resigned early, certainly just Governor Scott could make the appointments, and this would be moot. There are a few examples that they cite, however. There's one, I think, involving Governor Childs, who made an appointment on the way out. Yeah. And the funny thing is, Governor Childs also made an appointment on the way in. So he was shrewd and had it both ways. But it was never litigated, so the courts never decided it. And more importantly, the precedent that it establishes unanimously by the Supreme Court that the vacancy in this instance doesn't occur until the terms expire, that wasn't decided until 2006. Oh, yeah. Before that date, a lot of people thought the outgoing governor did make it. And Governor Bush thought that as well. He reached this deal. He reached out to Governor Childs and said, hey, we have this dispute. Why don't we just agree? And they agreed on Justice Quince. But as he was governor after that, he recognized there's conflict there. And so he asked the Supreme Court to resolve it, and they did. Mm-hmm. And so all these examples that happened before the Supreme Court answered the question, they're really irrelevant.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Domes, chatting with John Mills, an attorney representing the League of Women Voters in their suit against Governor Rick Scott's attempt to pick three new justices to Florida's Supreme Court as he ends his term in office.
So the nominating commission, they're gathering applications with a deadline of October 8th is what I'm reading.
Right.
So with all of this work, you're saying it doesn't mean anything?
Well, we're challenging, no, the work of the JNC does mean something and is very important. We're challenging two official actions that have taken, and we're saying that these completed actions or in-process actions are beyond the authority of the officials. Mm-hmm. First, with regard to the governor, our position is that he has no authority to set a deadline. So when he sets this deadline of November 10th, that's illusory. It isn't the deadline, and he can't do that. And he's still defending his authority to do that, but the law is very clear he has no authority to do that. And in fact, the JNC, through its lawyer in its response filed last week, agreed with us on that point and said, no, he doesn't have that authority. Mm-hmm. So we expect and hope that the court will follow through that and say that he lacked that authority to issue the order that he issued back several weeks ago. As to the JNC, there may be some confusion. We're not trying to stop the JNC from doing its work. It has important work to do, and it probably needs to get started right now. These are three positions, and it's going to have to solicit applications and do thorough background checks and interview these people and go through that process. And we are not saying that it has to wait until January to start that process. Mm-hmm. We're just saying it can't make the nominations before there's a vacancy. You can't make the nominations to somebody who has no power to make them. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason for that, I mean, just aside from common sense, is that the Constitution requires the governor to make the appointments within 60 days of the nominations. Mm-hmm. So a November 10 deadline, if that were correct, would mean the new governor will only have one day to make these appointments because 59 of those 60 days will have elapsed. And so we're saying the JNC can't do that either. It can't shortchange the new governor of his full 60 days. But it could certainly solicit applications, start the process, and be ready to make those nominations right on the day of the vacancies, which will be January 9th, a Wednesday.
So how can the JNC do its job that would be seen as fair to the incoming governor, whoever that may be, with them not saying, well, I don't trust their process and all of that stuff? How could the JNC do its job?
Well, I think we should all presume that everybody is going to do their job with proper intent. And I've read, you know, people who say, oh, the JNC, they're all appointed by the governor and they can't be fair. They're going to give whoever is elected governor a bad slate. And I don't think we should presume that's going to happen. And I certainly don't presume that's going to happen. And again, we're not trying to stop them from doing their work. We're just saying, hey, your process you've announced right now is a process to nominate by November 10th. Mm-hmm. That's inappropriate. If you want to nominate by the time the nominations, the earliest moment they can be delivered, which is when these vacancies occur, you know, my clients have no objection to that. And as a member of the bar, I think that's great because it does help to minimize any delay. But the one thing that's clearly improper is to meet this November 10 deadline, they've set this application deadline before the election. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, there may not be a constitutional prohibition against doing that, but that's kind of almost seems dirty because, dirty's too strong a word. It's unfair because the application process to be a judge is a very arduous process. It's a long application. You have to list every jury trial you've ever had, all the lawyers involved in all of those cases. For a lot of applicants, that requires days and days of work. And it also requires sensitive financial information. You have to put all your finances out for the world to see, health information, family information, things that, you know, you don't want to put out there unless you think you have a good shot.
Yeah.
And the two people running for governor have very different views on a lot of things, and appointment of judges is one of those things. They're both campaigning on it. And so the kind of person that one would appoint is probably very different than the other. And so applicants should be able to know who's making the decision. Mm-hmm. If they think that they wouldn't have a shot with Mayor Gillum, they should be able to wait and see if he wins the election, or vice versa. If they think that Mr. DeSantis is never going to consider them, they should be able to wait and see until after the election. That would be true any election. Yeah. We have something different this year, which makes it even more crazy to have the application deadline before, and that is that we're actually going to have on the ballot an amendment to the Constitution that would change the qualifications to be a judge. Oh. We have right now the mandatory retirement age is 70. When you reach 70, you can't serve as a judge anymore unless you're finishing out the second half of a term. Uh-huh. Amendment 6, which the Supreme Court has approved to go on the ballot now, would raise that age to 75. Uh-huh. So, you know, applicants now, certainly anybody in their 60s or late 60s, they need to know which rule is it going to be. They may not even be eligible, you know, or certainly eligible for any period of time.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we think it's very important that they move the deadline to after the election, but it doesn't have to be long after the election. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've got this process right now where it's from October 8th to November 10th. If that's enough time to do it, and they don't have to really make their nominations until January, then it would be easy for them just to take applications early December, late November, whatever.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes chatting with attorney John Mills. Remember to follow us and share this program with your friends and colleagues at Rotunda Podcast on your social media platforms. Back to the program.
So one of the arguments from Scott's lawyers that I've been reading, and maybe you've already addressed this, they're going forward with this process to make sure there are no gaps. It's a seamless transition. And what do you say to that?
Well, there's always gaps, and there's a gap under theirs as well. You can't make the appointment until there's a vacancy. And then when you make the appointment, even if you make it that same day, people have to move. Justice Cantero, retired justice who's now the lawyer for the JNC, wrote a concurring opinion, you know, explaining all of this, that it takes time to move and shut down your practice or do whatever. So there's going to be a gap either way, and it's going to be the same gap. There's no need for our interpretation to result in any longer delay than their interpretation. Either way, on the day that the appointments can be made, the JNC can make the nominations. And the only difference is the governor who has that power has the option to use more time if he needs it. If he needs to take up to 60 days, the Constitution limits him to 60 days, he can take up to 60 days, but he could start his process beforehand as well and certainly be ready to make an appointment the day that the nominations are made, if he chooses to and feels that that's the wise thing to do. And if he thinks he needs a little bit more time to deliberate, the Constitution gives him that right. Uh-huh. And either way, it gives him that right. And their interpretation would put two sentences in the same provision directly at odds.
So as we wrap up, I'm not a lawyer. This is all complex to me. Is this an unnecessary fight that we're in here? Has it already been laid out as to what the process should be? And the governor is just having a PR battle with the league and Common Cause.
You would think so, because, again, he has admitted this on the floor of the Supreme Court. So you would think this would not need to be litigated. But when he continues to say he's going to do it, and he orders the JNC to make nominations while he's still in office, you know, when somebody tells you they're going to do something crazy, you should believe them. Mm-hmm. And so we do believe that he'll do it, even though he's admitted he doesn't have the authority. And the second those nominations are made, if he's in office and he makes an appointment, we have a constitutional crisis. Because then we have three people who he says are justices of the Supreme Court. Who's going to decide whether that's true or not? We have a seven-person court that has to have five justices to make a decision. Who are those three justices? And at that point, it would become about personalities and, well, who are they? And then, you know, politics, you know, we're trying to keep politics out of the process. And so we need to do whatever is possible to prevent him from creating this crisis and to make sure, ultimately, this is about democracy. Mm-hmm. This is about the will of the voters. Our system for appointing judges gives the voters a say, and there is accountability. The say is through the governor that they elect. And we have an election right now where one of the issues they're politicking over is these positions. Mm-hmm. And we're just saying that campaign means something, and whoever the voters choose should get to make this pick. And so we're just trying to make sure that that happens.
All right. Well, John Mills, thank you so much for taking this time to speak with me. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Checking in at the halfway point, the polls are showing favorable to Andrew Gillum over Ron DeSantis in the gubernatorial race. But what if the polls are giving a false sense of security, at least for the Gillum camp? Polls have been dicey, especially since 2016. We'll see. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. And be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.